5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on. The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, hello. I thought I'd start the show with that. I was going to have to tell you, get a studio audience. That's right. We've been having weather warnings every 30 seconds. We're in the middle of the thunderstorm and rain and flash floods and you name it. So if suddenly everything goes dead, either power's gone or a tornado's whisked me away to Oz, which would be kind of cool, to be honest with you. I like the Munchkins, to be honest. I think they're great. No, they're not. They're irritating little fuckers, to be honest with you. But anyway, it is the new Panic Room episode 142, and it's Thursday yet again. I think it's May, 9th of May. I'm going to guess it on the 9th ish. So, it is all going on. I have missed her. It's an old Cliff Richard song called We Don't Talk Anymore. I'm going to find it actually. And that can be our new tune because we don't, you know, she's, I work hard. She sleeps a lot of the time. So, like a little dormouse. I'm bringing my little dormouse.
Come on, I'm with you. We'll be right back.
humour. How are my little dormouse? I'm going to call you my little dormouse. How are you?
I'm good.
Still, enough about you. Let's talk about me. Yeah? So, how have you been?
You know, I've been so good. Last Saturday, the boyfriend did like a whole, I guess it was like Pamper X Tina Day. And I'm still kind of in that mindset. So like all week long, I've been like, you know, what is this work you speak of? So, you know, there's that.
I was going to say, I don't get pampered, but that's an absolute lie. Because this evening, my daughter, bless her, my 10-year-old daughter, announced she was going to cook dinner, and she did, and it was phenomenal.
Awesome.
It really was.
I felt
absolutely spoiled. I really did.
And
I deserve to be spoiled. I have to say, I deserve
we all
it.
Do. Yeah.
Well, me,
yeah.
I think me more than most, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, you do work hard. I sleep hard, you work hard. You are right about that, yeah.
We're quite a team, really. It sort of balances out. I mean, it's funny because I guess the writer's life, et cetera, you know, because even when we sleep, I'm even dreaming about, you know, the project,
yeah.
So you don't
yeah.
really get away from it. You see, actually, it follows you into your sleep. Although, you know, then, you know, I often sort out, you know, niggly plot points and I actually came up with one of my characters' names in my sleep, and it was just like, and it's funny, you know, when you get the name for your character, and you can't change it. You can't
change it.
Because there was one, I had a character, and it turned out it was actually a name of someone quite fat. And I thought I'd give it a different, and I couldn't. So I thought, well, bugger it, and stuck with the name because it just, that was the character's name. You know, it's
I think you've said before,
sometimes these things come from, you know, beyond us or outside of us.
It's
and then
nice.
It's like,
yeah,
that's the character's name. You ain't going to change it. And that's that.
You know, with the whole Game of Thrones thing, people are going crazy over some of the things that are happening on the show right now. And,
I saw the Starbucks cup, that was funny.
They're getting mad at the direction the writers are taking it, and you know, as a writer, I just want to say that sometimes the characters take on a life of their own. I mean,
mm-hmm.
So I have had people get mad at me about, you know, well, why didn't you take it in this direction, why didn't you do this? Well, you know what, that's just the way, I mean, it felt like I wasn't in control.
Well,
and I think that,
I've had people say that to me, why do you do this? And I just, well, fuck off.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't write for
anybody. No, seriously, go write your own fucking book if you're that good.
Thank you.
Write your own.
Yeah. Exactly.
I've got a good idea for a book. Well, I don't care, and B, sit down and fucking write. I'll just blather on about it.
Yeah,
write it.
Definitely.
When I say I've got a good idea for a book, and I wrote it, and here it is, there you go.
Yeah.
You know, so
no,
just get out of my face. Really?
Yeah.
Or even better, when they say, you should write my story. No.
Oh, God. Yeah.
No, I'm not going to do that, because to be fair, most of these people are painfully dull. You know, you couldn't possibly interest me. In fact, there's a guy I'm actually writing for at the moment, and he is absolutely fascinating. He comes from the world of high finance, hedge funds, et cetera, and he is, I could sit and talk to him for just a day. He's the stories,
wow.
And it's just like, you know, so-and-so, and they went to the casino, and they gambled 20 million away in a weekend, and da-da-da. It's just like this whole different world, you know, like where $20 million is nothing to these people. It's pocket change. It's like,
wow.
What? Give us a tenner. Give us $20 for, you know, coffee, please, and some food.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Wouldn't that be nice? That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
It's like, the likes of like Paul McCartney, and the great comedian, English comedian Alexis Sale. I remember seeing him live when I was at university, and you know, he used to say, you know, you ever just want to ring up like Paul McCartney, who's worth like £800 million, and say, give us some fucking money. And he said, well, yeah, you know, all these, and it's one of my dad's favourite things, you know, so you know, like with Live Aid and you know, where they organize all these events and that. So, well, instead of all this and organize events, why don't they just give some of their money?
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, Paul McCartney could donate what Live Aid made and not see a dent in his bank account, you know. So, and then, you know, I don't know.
Oh, that would
I mean, a lot of it is publicity, self-publicity, obviously, but.
Yeah.
But, my dad was always one for tipping as well. I mean, we don't have such a big tipping culture in England as we do here. You know, and he used to say, well, nobody tips me for doing my job. And, you know, on that stage, it is difficult for me here to tip.
Yeah.
Because, and I know it's taken me, or even now, it goes against the grain of it. So, you know, I'm supposed to tip this young slip of a girl 20% for bringing my food. To be fair, for that, if I know I was going to have to pay that, I'd have gone and fetched it myself from the kitchen. To be honest, I could have. It's about, you know, 8 yards. I could have gone and got it. Be honest, you know. So, you know, to give us a like $15 just to bring it this 8 yards, it's a bit of a rip off to me. To be honest, she's not cooked it. You know, I'd have to give 20% to the chef, the guy who cooked it. But literally, all she did was carry it. I mean, you're giving them money for carrying things, or even, you know, for not dropping it. I mean, you carried a plate for 2 minutes. You carried a plate, and you're getting $15. Well, really, you know.
Well, you know, in her defense, you know, I think the cooks actually get paid, you know, minimum wage or whatever, but the servers, they don't. They only get. I knew this one lady who she worked 22 years as a server and at Pizza Hut, and she had topped out at like $5.25 or something. So that was like all she was going to make. That was it. So she lived on her tips, you know. So servers don't get paid that much.
I understand that, but that's the culture. That is a culture that benefits the restaurant owners because they can pay less than minimum wage, knowing it's going to be topped up. So, you know, it's a stealth tax more than anything, and it allows them to underpay. Because you think, I mean, if you don't tip, then that person, he's right, he's getting paid like $2.50 an hour, which my stepson is. He worked at Papacito's, funny enough, and the tipping was phenomenal. He used to make bank on the tipping, but the basic wage was I think it's like $2.50 an hour, which is like pitiful.
Yeah.
But again, because that's the cut. If it had been in England, it'd have starved to death because we're not great tippers in England.
No.
I mean, here, and I mean, you get the bill and they'll break it down for you, you know, like 7%, 7.5% is this, 10%, 15%,
20%.
Even my the hairdresser we go to, you know, they have this little screen that comes up and, you know, if you think it was all right, it's this. If you think it was wow, it's that. Really?
Yeah.
Where's the button for crap haircut then, love? Well, you give me money to walk out with this shit haircut.
Yeah, you owe me, right?
Yeah, you pay me. I've got. Well, that's the other thing. I mean, you know, you go to the whatever store and they give you a carry bag, yeah. And on the carry bag is the store name.
Right.
So you're then walking around. You are a walking advertisement. That's why they pick you up. An advertisement. They should pay you. Look, okay, we're going to eat. You can either have a plain carrier bag or you can have a carry bag with our logo and name on it. And we'll pay you $1 to take this carry bag and carry it around. Maybe just leave it in the back of your car for a bit so people see it. That would be fair because that's what you do. You are advertising their business, but you might as well stamp it on your forehead.
I like that. I like that. That's a good idea. Yeah.
So basically, we've now ascertained that my entire family is a family of miserable bastards. So, speaking of not miserable bastards, what have we got on the show this evening, my dear?
I'm excited. We have two very awesome guests tonight. We have horror author T. Fox Dunham and fantasy adventure writer Eric Schubach. I think that's how you say it.
That's fantastic.
Schubach.
So,
yeah. It is. Yeah.
I'm excited too. In many many ways. So let's shall we? Should we? Should we?
We should.
Let's. Okay, go on. You do the intro then for the first guest.
Okay, the first guest we have is horror author T. Fox Dunham.
Hello.
Well, that was a nice intro. Hello, thank you for the intro.
Do we call you T? Do we call you T Fox? Mr. T? What?
You can call me Fox. And hello, Xtine and James. It's very nice to speak to you.
Hello.
Hi.
Can you hear that? Are we seriously in the middle of a big thunderstorm here? Can you hear it?
Yeah.
No,
in my head, I can. So.
I should take the microphone outside. I've got my headphones. Sorry, as we say in the business, I've got my cans on, and I can hear it through that. It is pretty awesome. It is pretty awesome.
Oh, wonderful.
It's all very romantic until the power goes out, and that's it. No more shows. So, so talk quickly. Let's talk quickly.
The atmosphere.
So, I was telling Xtina before we came on the air, we have corresponded email-wise, so it's great to finally get to chat to you. Fox is one of the brains behind the Time for Violence. Am I right?
Indeed.
You have me lined up for an interview coming up soon as well, so that'll be exciting for you.
Yes, it will. It's already exciting. I can't wait.
Are you here to talk to us about that or something else? Or Xtina never tells me what's going on. I turn up at the last minute and she just doesn't bother telling me, to be honest. So
let me tell you a little bit about A Time for Violence. It's a wonderful anthology that was put together by Andy Roush over, and it's Too Close to the Bone Publishing. And it's sort of a collection of horror stories, noir. There's some basic crime stories in there from some just amazing authors. We've got people like Joe Lansdale in it, and of course T. Fox on them. And you've got a story in there, James.
Me.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm on there. Which, it's funny when I think it was Chris that contacted me, and he said this is the TOC so far, and it's like, I am not worthy. It's a table of contents to die for. I mean, it's just phenomenal. How on earth, you know, you've got such a band of brilliant, brilliant authors together. I don't know. Absolutely amazing.
It is pretty excellent, yeah. And, you know, I'm lucky enough to be in there. And I even just, I mean, the authors are around the world. I spoke to Isabel Blackford in Australia a few weeks ago. And last night I was talking to Elka Ray, who's over in Vietnam, and
Isabel is a Hellbound Books author, obviously. In fact, I've been messaging with her today, actually, for enough. I think we've had the one from Vietnam as well. We've had her on the show.
Yeah,
very cosmopolitan, but it is. I mean, like you say, you've got authors from every corner of the globe, which is phenomenal.
And some big names too, which are really excited to be in, you know, in a TOC with. And the stories are in such a great range from women authors, men authors, or from around the world. We have a collection of horror crime. My story is called Disrespect, and I'm a big Philly crime writer. I write a lot about the mafia. I've been studying organized crime and mafia for years, and my story takes place in Atlantic City. And if you've ever been to Atlantic City, it's not as advertised. It's almost like a dead cell, and it just has this wonderful horror feeling to it. And of course, my story is about two characters, and one is asked to kill his friend. And if he doesn't do it, as they say, he'll be whacked. They'll whack him out. They'll rub him out, you know.
Yeah. Wow. There's a dilemma.
Exactly. So it's just a great book, and I'm really excited to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's out now. It came out the first of this month, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. And we've been interviewing the authors on What Are You Afraid of? Horror and Paranormal Show, that's my show on Parax Radio, for about 5 months now. And it's funny, James, you are actually coming up this week. I had a lot of authors to go through, but I will be emailing you in the next few days to set up an appropriate time where we can talk.
Oh, that's, it's nice for me to, it's nice to be invited, so thank you, because I don't get out much. But yeah, it's great. It's nice to be on the other side of the other side of the microphone, I guess, as it were. So it's always fun being a guest.
I don't have to
worry about pressing the buttons and shit, which is great.
That is the only thing you wouldn't have to worry about. But I think we were guests on a different show once, and it's hard for us to be just guests. I felt we were, you know, we were taking over the show, which was kind of fun.
We did a bit, didn't we? So I promise I will try not to. Although it's difficult because you just sort of you slip into it, and suddenly you're there, and you forget. Oh, hang on, I'm actually a guest. Probably why we don't get invited on many shows, to be honest. <with
you. laughs> Okay, let me make note. Cancel things.
Oh, no.
I'm glad I figured this out now.
Please, that was the highlight of my year. I've told everyone. Well, I think I've told all my friends, but I don't have many friends, to be honest. So.
And you'll probably have less after my show. But if you have, you know, we also feature on the show, we do, we talk to a lot of authors, and I know a lot of authors. I've been building contacts for years, so I sort of dove into my contacts to bring them on. But we also feature ghost stories and fiction excerpts from other authors, and we have a lot of variety. Anything that's dark, that's kind of what we do. That's our bailiwick. Anything on this side of noir, horror, mm-hmm. paranormal investigation, we interview horror directors and horror film writers and horror authors. We've had many paranormal investigators on the show. We've had Katrina Weidman on from, she was on Paranormal Lockdown, and now has a new show. Yeah, and she's been on a few times. She's a Philadelphia native, so she comes on, and
I have to ask Fox, I mean, what is your take? I know this is one of the questions on the questionnaire you sent out. What is your take on the paranormal, certainly on the TV paranormal investigators, and obviously the Ed and Lorraine Warren? We'd have to mention those in this. You know, what do you make of it all?
Well, you know what? It's an industry like any other. You know, we're in the business of fiction, and we're out there selling stories, and television paranormal genre is very much the same. They take paranormal experiences and they build them out of order into a dramatic show, and you have to take it with a grain of salt because there is a lot of fiction, there is a lot of narrative and exaggeration, and it just doesn't really work like that. You know, the real paranormal investigators go out there with equipment and they'll say sit in a cemetery for 3 days, maybe catch an EVP or two, maybe see a white shadow that they've caught on film, this little motion in the corner next to a grave. But TV paranormal is very different than real life paranormal investigation because the TV people, they have to tell a story, they have to maintain the ratings, and they have to bring proof and, you know, experiences and events to the screen, or they lose their time.
Well, it's very similar to the. I'm a big fan of wildlife TV. You know, David Attenborough is like my all-time number one hero. And watching, so I've seen document, read books, and seen documentaries about the making of wildlife shows. And they will sit. And there was a guy, and I forget the guy's name now. He's a world-renowned wildlife filmmaker, and he sat 6 months. Day in, day out, to get like a 2-minute clip of I think it was a bear or no, it was some sort of mountain wildcat, some sort of particular part of its behavior. Every day he sat in his hide 6 months, and of course you don't see what all you see is suddenly you see the 2-minute clip. Wow. I think it was too bad. I think they were fighting down a cliff or something, or, you know, they sort of, where you see the lions hunting and that. You know, they can spend weeks waiting because, you know, you see these shows, you think lions are hunting like every 3 minutes, but they don't. They hunt, I think something like 8 out of 9 chases end in the animal getting away, which is obviously boring TV. So the kills, you know, it can be like once every 3 or 4 days before they actually kill something. But of course you don't see that on the TV. They don't show you that. It'd be a very dull TV show.
You know, I have watched that Bigfoot show, and I am so disappointed. I have never once seen Bigfoot when I've watched the show, not once. They never find him, and I think that's just sad.
But
you
it's
know,
on like seven, season now. Finding, but surely by now, you know, the viewing public, are the viewing public that stupid?
Yeah. We're talking about the different paranormal shows and how they have to kind of, you know, give you something. But I used to be a big fan of Ghost Hunters. That was with, what was his, oh God, I can't remember their name, Grant and the other guy,
Grant
whatever.
Wilson.
Yeah, and I liked that show because, you know, you would go for many shows without anything happening. You know, they would debunk, like, everything. And, you know, they would get to a point where I'm like, oh, my gosh, will you show me a freaking ghost? But, you know, so I always thought that show was, you know, I'm going to say semi-real.
Just put up for a fake one because those shows sort of took off over in England. I mean, I've been here about 8 years now, no, nearly 9 years now. Wow. And it was usually some old has-been kids who used to do kids' TV on a Saturday morning presenter running around on, you know, they'd have the green filter on and just somebody would slam the door in the background and just scream, oh, it's one of the crew, is it? They slammed the door, you know, seriously. And somebody would go, yeah. Ooh, and but like you say, as Fox said, it's showmanship. And obviously, you know, the people, they keep bringing them out, so people are watching them.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we're very careful to make the distinction that we are not paranormal investigators. We're parajournalists. And that we don't verify or justify or try to prove the stories received. We're storytellers. You know, we just want to share the story. We leave the burden of proof or belief on the listener. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm a fiction author. That's what I do. These people claim the stories are true. Okay, cool. Who am I to dismiss that? And it's just fun. Just get out there and have some fun. It's funny, you're talking about Grant Wilson. We're actually working on getting him on the show in a couple of months. Yeah, so it's actually a small community.
So, yeah. And but Jason Hall, that was his name. There we go. Okay, I had his ingredient.
It's been a lot of fun, too, because I've been trying to get a variety of guests. In fact, every year, Food Network does a show called Halloween Baking Championship, and that's where you get six or seven excellent bakers who come on and do Halloween baking challenges. And every year far, we've been able to get one of the contestants to come on the show and tell me about Halloween snacks you can make for the season and that sort of thing.
Cool. That's awesome.
That is fantastic. I like that. A great idea. Well, I'm going to make a note of that, Xena. We're going to steal that.
Yes, sir.
That's
amazing.
We'll have that.
So, Fox, I want to hear more about your story in A Time for Violence. Do you have an excerpt for us?
I do have a bit of an excerpt here. Okay. Yeah. So let me set the setting for you. Imagine that you've been called to a Christmas party with your screw-up friend who just ended up costing the mob some more money. Now, they're not made guys. That's an important distinction. They haven't been made yet. When you're a made guy, you've been brought into the organization, you're untouchable. These guys are still really touchable, and they're vulnerable. Now, the boss, now this is based on Nicky Scarpo, he was a real mob boss in Philadelphia in the 80s, and he was known for violence and depravity. He just killed everybody. As soon as they stopped making him money or they started costing him, he'd whack you and lay you out in Atlantic City or something like that. So you've got the main character going in to meet the mob boss, and he's trying to smooth this thing over. And he thinks they're going to lay down a tax on him, and they're going to be able to walk out of there. So he says, you be careful now. He would give you loyalty to. Your fate will be theirs. That knocked the wind out of Frankie. The boss had made his decision, and he waited to feel cold metal pressed against his neck. Frank hoped they'd bury him somewhere peaceful, far, far away from this rotting, diseased city. I've always had my eye on you, he continued. We need good people, steady people. Not like some of the jokers that came up under Bruno. I'm rebuilding things right, and I want all these beefs resolved by the new year. Well, we have a lot of respect for you, Mr. Scarpa, Frank said, lying, hoping he could still maneuver his way out of this. We need a clean ship. I'm getting rid of all the garbage and making sure the engine runs right. All beefs need to be resolved by the end of the month. So this is good, Frank dared to ask. Still not sure who's going to get whacked. Consider it resolved, Scarpo said. Come here. The boss offered him his cheek. Frank leaned down, and he kissed his jaw like a little boy kissing his mother goodnight. He backed away, starting to relax. Then little Nicky grabbed his lapel, pulled him in close. As long as you give that mouthy son-of-a-bitch cousin of yours this. He mimicked the gun with his left hand, then dropped his thumb, imitating the hammer. You do that for me, and when New York opens the books, we'll straighten you out. And there it was. God had commanded Frank to spill the blood of his family. The test had come. If he didn't follow his orders, they'd probably both share the same sandy, shallow hole. Little Nicky let go. You know what works, Scarpo said. You take it over like my little nephew does. Ask that son of a bitch to get something out of the refrigerator. And when his back is turned, Frank didn't say anything and nearly hit the wall trying to leave the office to face his cousin. Joey wasn't that smart, but he possessed an animal sense of danger. He'd know something was up the moment he saw him. So that's the excerpt from Disrespecting, A Time for Violence.
Oh, that wasn't as much as you gave. Read. He's. I know, right?
I'm gonna have to buy the damn book now. So I suppose I am gonna buy the book because I have to.
You're in it, yeah.
Well, you know, if you know, I don't want to sound big-headed, but I bought every book that I was in, you know, but not this one, because the other authors that are in it, I've got to have it. It's one from the bookshelf. But I need to get a bookshelf actually. So.
Right, I need one as well. Yeah.
I give away most of mine.
Yeah.
Bookshelf. Maybe he just means the book, not the bookshelf, because you know.
I'm very, very mean with giving books away, to be honest. Because again, we were talking earlier about how mean and miserable I probably because I'm a Yorkshireman. We're known for our thriftiness, you know. So I, and people say, can I have a copy of your book? Yes, yeah, you can. $14.99 on Amazon. Help yourself. Have as many as you want. Oh, do you know, I have some, you know, well, yeah, I've got some, but you know, I'm not giving them away, seriously.
No, what is true. Some people,
you don't go to somebody, you know, who works in pizza, it's like, gives a free pizza. You work down the car factory, can I give a free car? Gives a free car, mate. You just don't do that.
As if people are, you know, as if authors are desperate for people to read their stories, that they'll give away books at, you know, $10 a piece for here you go, here you go, here you go. And it's, no, buy the bloody book. That's how we get paid.
Well,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we spend, and people don't realize, you know, that even a short story, you know, there's hours and hours and hours that go into it, you know, and it's all I'm just going to give it away. No, sorry, no. No, 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 no. Call me mean if you want, but fine, you know, I'd rather, if somebody really wants to read it, they'll pay for it. That's what I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think so. Yeah. And there is enough of a market out there, I still think, that we're still making money writing as long as you're good.
Yeah, yeah. Although not nearly as much, you know, I mean, I used to love to go into a bookstore, you know, and browse, look through all the books and stuff. And do you know how often I don't do that anymore? I mean, it used to be like, you know, all the time. And, you know, I was keeping up with this author and that author, and you know, I mean, I don't have as much time as I used to, so maybe that's something as well. But I don't think as many people are reading. I really don't, and it's kind of scary. It is. So
you know,
at first we
think that, but then Barnes & Noble's doing very well here. In fact, they just survived an economic crunch, and they're expanding and. I go in there to work a lot. I don't like to write at home. I like to go in and write out in public and have coffee with it. And it's just so busy, and you see so many people coming forth and reading. In fact, I spent so much time there that I met my wife there.
Wow.
She was a barista, yeah. And I never went back.
Oh, well, she's that bad?
I'm actually quite there a lot. So, you know, she doesn't make me coffee, though. I have to make the coffee.
Oh no!
She was a barista. Yeah, she was a barista. She served coffee and yeah.
Well, exactly.
I didn't marry her for the coffee.
Last, the last thing she wants to do when she gets home is make coffee, you know. It's,
right. That's a lovely story.
But
now,
it's a great book, yeah.
What did I saw some, it was a picture, a meme or something, I don't know, and it was a couple months ago, and it was, you know, no, some, I don't know, but they were asking a bunch of kids, you know, if they could name a book, you know, name, and you know how many of them could do it? That was horrible.
And I think if a lot of them, when I remember seeing, I think it was a video, one of these VoxPop video clip things where they go on the street, and I think the ones that did manage it just happened to hit lucky because the name of a film that just happened to be from a book. You know, it's all Harry Potter, you know. Well, and most of them wouldn't even know a book if you slapped them around the head with it, you know. And it's, and yeah, again, ironic. It's just something like my son, my 6-year-old son, I can't remember the last time he read a book that wasn't specifically for school. But my daughter, she seems to have picked up my love of books. She was actually a book fair at her school the other day, and we went to that, and we bought a couple of books, and you know, she'll sit and read them. And she actually reads to me now, which is really sweet. And I like that. You know, it's great. You know, but again, anything to encourage them to read. If it's, in fact, they've got a big poster up at their school library that, you know, a kid who reads 5 minutes a day is exposed to this many words. And it's like 20 minutes a day that are exposed to so many million words a year. And I forget what the statistic was, but it significantly increases their test scores, you know, their whatever, you know, their knowledge. And it's like, yeah, I can believe that. You know, kids, they just don't read. I mean, I always have my nose in a book. But then again, we didn't have... We had two channels on the TV. We didn't have PlayStation or any of all of that. Nothing electronic, really. I think electricity had only just been invented when I was a kid.
You know, I have to brag on my son real quick. He the last time I mentioned him, he was reading Crime and Punishment.
You did finish that?
Yeah, he did, and now he's on the next. Well, I don't know about the next book, but he's on another book by the same dude, the brothers. Whatever, I don't know.
Well done, boy.
There you go. Yeah, he's like halfway through that book, and sometimes he'll, you know, he wants to spend time with mom, and he'll ask me, "Hey, you want to read with me?" And you know, no, I don't. But
yeah, no, fuck off, kid.
I mean, I do, and I get done with a whole chapter. I have no clue what's going on. He knows. He reads the little footnotes, and he just I don't. Wow,
that is fantastic.
I mean,
you nurture that, encourage that, because it is so rare these days.
Yeah,
and we need people to buy our books.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's 15. Yeah, he's 15. He's reading this stuff, and you know, they sent him home with a book to read over the summer. The book's like, you know, barely 100 pages. I'm like, the book he's reading now is like 600, and it's tiny writing too. It's tiny writing.
No, yeah.
Yeah. So he'll I'm impressed. I really am.
I have faith. I do. There's a magic in words that will never be mimicked or found in any other art form that we do. And yes, sure, younger kids have a lower attention span. There's so many delights that draw them away. But sooner or later, they're going to find their way to words. And, you know, well, I hope so, because I really want to eat, you know. So.
Yeah.
But I believe that people are always going to come back to books.
If all else fails, we'll just eat the children.
Problem
solved.
Swift. Why don't the Irish eat their children? Right.
Problem solved. There you go. Don't we?
So, yes, I believe in it, and I think books are always going to be with us, and they, you know, they require a little technology. They usually might. It's like, especially over here in America, you know, here, Dungeons & Dragons is getting more and more popular, and people are putting away video games to sit down at a table and tell an interactive story that software could never recreate. And just more and more gaming shops are opening, and I'm seeing more and more groups, and they're teaching their children. And, you know, the 80s was always the big era for Dungeons & Dragons and role-playing games, but it's now taking off again. I think we're moving into this new era where people are getting tired of technology and people are getting tired of video games. And you go to the cinema, and sure, you've got a couple of superheroes or a Disney film, but mostly it's a letdown. So they're going to the table and rolling dice or going to Barnes & Noble and buying books, especially with technology like Kindle, you know, when books are becoming so much more accessible. And I love the Kindle. I love Kindle. People always ask me, would you rather have your books in print or an e-book on Kindle? Kindle all the way. Books be done. Yeah. Print books can be done. I mean, I can appreciate the romance behind them, but before somebody would go, oh, sure, I will go to the bookstore and see if I can find your book. And now when people want to find out about
like,
my
yeah.
book, and I'm telling about it, and just as I'm telling about my book, they take out their phone, press a button, they go, got it.
Yeah.
And that's all it takes.
Yeah.
Although I must admit, I think whether I'm old school or not, but I'm a vexine, I love nothing more than just to browse a bookstore.
Yeah.
You know,
I never buy anything.
And again, I don't have an awful lot of time to do that now. Even the kids' school library. I also went to the book fair with my daughter, and you know, I thoroughly enjoyed that. You know, it was great. It was books and just picking them up, and I loved that.
I lived for the Scholastic Book Fair when I was younger. I really did. You know, I was a closet nerd. I used to hide my book in my purse and nobody knew that I read. But, I definitely look forward to that. Like, even with my daughter, when she was in school and she'd bring home, you know, I don't even think they don't even do that anymore, but she'd bring home that little Scholastic, you know, thing and I'd look through it and, you know, I'd want to order her books and she had no interest in it at all. And, you know, and I used to read to my kids too. And they tell you, you know, if you read to them, they won't. But no, she never really got into it. So, you know, that was my son did. So I guess that's a good thing there. But
I guess it's you know, some do, some don't. You know, it's pretty.
I would and I prefer to read the book on my Kindle. But then if it was really good, I have to buy the book and I have to put it on my shelf. And you know, it is just way more convenient now to pick up. You know, my phone is where I have my Kindle app, and it's just so much. It's very convenient. You know, I can read in bed. I don't have to have the light on. So you know, I do prefer that as far as you know, personal, I guess, comfort. You know, I don't have to slip on the light or, you know, although I have
fallen,
definitely. And I have fallen asleep there reading and have my phone like hit me on the head. And that's definitely, it'd be softer. It was a nice paperback.
that's the problem, you know, with a Kindle, you know, you try squashing a fly with a Kindle and you've got a broken Kindle. It's not the same. Or, you know, yeah. Wasps.
But, you know, I tried to get my kid to buy, you know, my son to buy one of the books that he's reading on Kindle, you know, and I was like, it's so easy and I could, you know, no. He had to have the you know, hardcover and, which is, you know, I think it's great and I admire him for it. But, you know, his reasoning though was that, you know, he didn't want to burn out his retinas. So I'm not sure how accurate that is.
Well, I can appreciate that. It's a badge. He wants to show it. He wants to show that he reads these books. He's intelligent enough to understand it, and he holds it and wears it like a badge.
He does.
And good on him.
No, you should.
Who was hiding her book, her Sweet Valley High books in her purse.
I would have hidden those, to be honest.
I'm hiding one now.
Excellent.
I want to read it. Well, I hate to say that it's about time for our first segment to end. I haven't been drinking, I promise. I haven't. Well, not a whole lot anyway. But you have to promise to come back, Fox.
Oh, definitely. We'll arrange that again. And I'll get you both on the show. James, I'll send an email over to you in the next few days. I always have a lot of balls up in the air, so I'm constantly juggling. And I'll be glad to get you on X-Bean also and bring your ghost stories.
Awesome. I have a
ghost. That'll be great.
And you can find the show you can find the show at www.whatareyouafraidofpodcast.com. There you go.
Awesome. Fantastic.
I will.
Fantastic.
I'll get your link for that.
Okay. A shout out for the book. Where can people find A Time for Violence?
You can find that at Amazon.com and links on all. We have tons of links up at the show website at www.whatareyouafraidofpodcast.com. Yeah, I got that in there.
Brilliant. Fantastic. No, right, no problem at all. Thank you so much for joining us, and I'll look forward to speaking to you next week.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, you two have a lovely night.
We will. Thank you. You too. Hopefully the weather will hold out for the rest of the show. And we'll be right back after these messages.
Panic Room Radio Show is sponsored by Hellbound Books, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher along with links to all their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. Hellbound Books is proud to be the first in the indie publishing business with their very own app on both Google Play and the App Store. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com, and Xtina has an author page found on the Hellbound website. Don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media. Our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website at www.panicroomradio.com.
Start again. It's a nice day to
Welcome back to part two.
And we're back. Either studio audience didn't cheer that time. I don't know. I don't know. You just can't get the stuff these days, can you? So, hey. As we were talking before we came on the air about my favourite person in this country, God bless him. And whoever's listening, if there's anybody still working in the White House who's not, you know, either family member or sleeping with him or both, I think, in some respects, take his Twitter account off him.
Yeah.
Twitter wiped out $19.1 billion off the global stock markets. That's not, you know, it's like, seriously? And you know, said something he was going to do is increase the China tariffs, and suddenly, what is going on with that man?
I think that they could pay a computer guy to like make it look like he's tweeting and have it like routed somewhere else. So
they could do that. They just have it on a closed White House server. So he thinks he's tweeting, and it just stays there. Yeah.
Why haven't the fact that
someone in that position communicates by tweet and bad tweets, the tweets of a fifth grade girl, to be honest with you. this really sums him up, and I do like this. Here we go.
I really believe I'd run into it even if I didn't have a weapon. Nobody knows the system better than me.
Nobody knows politicians better than I do.
Nobody knows. Nobody's better.
Nobody's stronger. There's nobody bigger or better at the military than I am.
I love the First Amendment. Nobody loves it better than me. Nobody loves the Bible more than I do.
There is nobody that respects women more than I do.
Nobody builds walls better than me.
Nobody's in the history of this country has ever known so much about infrastructure as Donald Trump. Nobody knows that better than me.
Nobody even understands it but me.
Nobody can do it like me.
Which is why I alone can fix it. I have Ivy League education, smart guy. I know words, I have the best words.
You're like, I'm a smart person. It's this, it's not my salesmanship. It's what? This, you know what that is? It's the brain power.
I'm getting thousands of letters and tweets that I was right about the whole situation. I mean, I've been right about a lot of things, frankly. I should be a newscaster because I called it before the news.
I watch this stuff. You know, I'm like a guy with vision.
I have an instinct for this kind of thing.
I'm good at war. I've had a lot of wars of my own. I'm really good at war.
In my book, I predicted terrorism.
It's a rigged system. I think I've done a great service by pointing this out. I was the one that really broke the glass ceiling on behalf of women.
I think I'm doing the military a great favor.
Did a great job in Texas, a great job in Florida.
I truly believe that the first 100 days of my administration has been just about the most successful in our country's history.
You look like a million and a half people.
Thank you, everybody. What a crowd. What a turnout.
I understand steaks. It's my favorite food, and these are the best.
It keeps me from running.
Can you believe it?
Well, to be fair, no, I can't believe it, to be honest with you. I mean, I think the one thing he is the very best at is just being a complete knob, to be honest.
What a guy. What a guy. You know, if he actually believed half of the things he says, I mean, I did know somebody once, and he even would say, You know, if you say something enough times, if you tell a lie enough times, you'll just start to believe it.
You believe it yourself. So, yeah, well, people with Trump's the narcissistic personality, they do. They will lie and lie and lie and lie, and it becomes a truth to them. In fact, as I said on last week's show, that they've analysed it, and over his presidency so far, he's told some like 10,000-odd untruths and downright lies, which equates to 12 every day of his presidency, which is one lie every 2 hours, which is just phenomenal. If my kids were like that, they'd get a thump. They really would. You know. But he just can't help it, you know. And I think we've all known people like this. I've known several people over my lifetime like that, who will just they will do something, and you'll call them on it, and they will just lie to your face. It's like Trump, you know. He'll say, "I never said that." Now we've just played you back the recording of you saying it. You did say.
Well,
no,
you
I didn't. What I said? No. He won't even say you misunderstood. He'll say what I said was. And then he'll say something to me. No, we've played your recording back, Trumpy, and this is what you said. No, what I said, and it's just like, really? Nobody's better. That's the sad thing, is obviously because he gets caught out. He's not even that very good at lying, to be honest. Otherwise, people would not think he was lying.
My son used to call it creative truth.
Creative truth, I like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm not lying. It's just creative truth.
Yes. Mm. Yes. Yeah. Giving credit
it is part of the human condition. You know, people lie for different reasons. You know, we will lie, you know, to spare somebody's feelings. Although it's funny, actually, I stopped doing that years ago because every time I tried to do that, it would backfire on me, and I would end up being the bad guy. So now, I don't lie to cover up. So people think I'm very blunt, and I am, because I've been bitten so many times. We ran a recruitment agency many, many years ago, and we had this old guy. He was an old guy, although he's probably about the age I am now. And we got him a job. We managed to get him a job. He'd been unemployed for quite some time. We got him a job, and he was terrible at it. He was just... Harry was one of these, I think they have them here, where they refill printer cartridges.
Uh-huh.
And that was his job, was to refill these kids' printer cartridges. And I remember we did our follow-up. We'd been there a few days, and we did our follow-up with the store owner. And, you know, he said, well, he's very good at filling the cartridges, but, you know, it takes him like 4 hours to fill one.
Wow.
You know, and it was... So they had to let him go. So to spare the guy's feelings, instead of saying, look, you know, you're fucking, you can't even fill cartridges, you old duffer. you know, I just lied to spare his feelings. And then it came back on me. I think something came out and he blamed me for losing him his job. And I just, after that, I thought, right, from now on, I would tell people the truth, you know, because it's just not worth it. But, I mean, you know, big lies. Big lies to get yourself out of trouble, that's fine. You know, I mean, sometimes that's necessary, I feel.
Yeah, definitely. But, you know, if the glove does not fit, you know.
Well, you ask O.J. Simpson, his glove didn't fit,
exactly.
He got away with it. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
What
do you mean? anywho, so... Is there anything else? Can I go to bed now? Is there anything else happening?
No. Yes, we have our second guest. I'm excited to talk to him.
Bring him on then.
Yeah.
Forthwith.
Yes, fantasy adventure writer Eric Schubach.
Hello.
I usually get that reaction when I leave a room.
Well, if you want, we'll do that at the end of the show, so we can cheer you up if that works. So how are you this evening, sir? Good. How are you?
Fantabulous, and how are you too?
Do you know, I'm tired. I've had a long couple of days. I'll, you know, it's been very, very. I'm ready for bed, to be honest with you. And I'm glad it's Friday tomorrow, because then it's Saturday, and that's great.
Yeah, you know, I didn't mention it earlier when you asked me how I was doing, but since Eric was nice enough to ask me how I was doing, I had the cover reveal for my new poetry book that comes out on the
17th. You did?
Yeah.
And
was I
there for you? No, I wasn't.
You
completely forgot about it. Totally forgot about it.
But I know that you totally support everything I do. So, even when I write.
Well, it is point. It didn't even fucking rhyme, to be honest with you. But you know, I support you. I think because I have to, really.
I mean,
next week we have Extina's non-rhyming poetry book out. We have Matchless, which is a phenomenal book, and Satanic Panic,
yes,
which is an absolute favourite of mine so far this year. So we've got three fantastic books out next week. So next week's show is going to be packed. It's going to be
packed. It is.
Sounds entertaining.
Guest on the show. Yeah, I'm going to be a guest. So I'm really excited. You're going
to
have to ask
Eric.
Me. Some
questions. Okay, don't pick your part up. Eric is here to talk to us about his book. Is it Techromas? You're going to have to pronounce this for me.
Techromancy Scrolls.
That's the one. I'd have got there. The tagline: A World Where Magic and Technology Collide. That sounds phenomenal. So, over to you. Tell us a little bit about it.
Basically, it's a post-apocalyptic type of a book. Where the moon was struck by a rogue astral body that broke it apart and kind of destroyed a lot of the Earth. And so we're 3,000 years later, and mankind's trying to raise up from the ashes again. And they're at about medieval levels as far as technology goes. But this time around, there's magic in the world. And the book focuses on the main character, Lainey Herder. She is a chicken farmer, and she aspires to become a knight in this book.
A chicken farmer. Where did you come up with an idea like that? What made you decide, I'm going to make him a chicken farmer?
Well, I wanted somebody that the nobles and the knights would kind of look down upon, you know, just a regular person that's toiling to basically feed everybody. And
uh-huh.
My wife also herds chickens, so that was a little bit of it.
Yeah, I like that. I do. That's pretty cool. And is that something you normally write? Is fantasy? Do you like that kind of stuff? Is that
well, I love fantasy. I love science fiction, paranormal, just about anything I'll read. I'm trying to think here. This is my first foray into fantasy. I'm usually in the paranormal or romance categories, but this was a labor of love. And it wound up being the most popular series that I have right now.
Wow. Oh,
fantastic. So what made you want to try a different genre?
Well, because like I say, I love sci-fi and fantasy. And
mm-hmm.
I was thinking, you know, hey, what would happen if mankind had to start over again? And there's been a few out there like that, like the Shannara books and other books like that, that I'm thinking, yeah, that's a pretty good take, but I wanted to keep it where there's not elves or anything like that. It's just humans just trying to rebuild.
Awesome. Speaking of fantasy, I have to ask, are you a Game of Thrones fan?
Believe it or not, I have never watched a full episode until season 8, episode 3. It's never really interested in me for some reason, and I don't know why, until somebody pointed out that I should look at a specific character online. And so I looked up Arya Stark, and I saw all the different fights and the different kills she's had and stuff like that, and I'm like, you know, this is a awesome character, and this is the character that I wish was the main focus of the Game of Thrones. And then imagine my surprise when I finally watched one episode with my wife and my son-in-law, and it happened to be the one where Arya Stark killed the Night King.
Yes,
and I was like, sweet, I'm like, yes.
I know,
hold on,
I know.
Yeah, that's a big spoiler, sorry.
No, no, you know, nobody listens to us anyway, so it's okay.
Oh, great.
yeah, that's what we tell all our guests, so they, you know, relax a little bit. No, I wasn't a fan of it until last year. I kind of binge-watched. No, maybe it was 2 years ago. I binge-watched the whole series, you know, everything that was out. And I loved it. I really, and I'm up to date now. And it's like every Sunday I'm like, it's Game of Thrones night. It's Game of Thrones night. And so, no, I'm totally excited. And she's one of my favorite characters. But I have to admit, I have a thing for Tyrion. He's the dwarf. Yeah, I love him. I do. I'm totally in love with Tyrion. I think that, you know, in my eyes, I want Jon Snow and Daenerys to, I don't even know what, fight and kill each other. And I want Sansa and Tyrion to rule, you know, that's my idea. But Yeah. And James doesn't know anything about Game of Thrones. He's watched the one episode, I think. And
First episode, and it didn't grab me. And sadly, that was it. And I think the problem now is is it like the eighth season now? And it's like, well, although to be fair, I did it with Breaking Bad. You know, I thought watched the first, that grabbed me from the first 5 minutes. I binge watched the entire.
Yeah.
Load of it, but I don't know. It really has all the other, you know, it's got the, you know, dragons and violence and nudity and all the rest of it. It really should grab me, but I don't know. It's funny enough. I think it's the fantasy side again. I was mentioning this before, the Handmaid's Tale, which the third season is out later this year, so awesome. I didn't watch that for the longest time because I thought it was a period drama. Based on the imagery for the, you know, the lady in a little hat and everything, I honestly thought it was period drama, and I thought, I'm not watching that shite. And then somebody said, you really should watch it. It's a dystopian. And I thought, right, okay. And I watched it, and it was phenomenal. I mean, I'm really looking forward to the third season to see where they go with it, because it was great.
Have you seen?
Absolutely
fantastic.
Have you
seen the trailer?
Is there a trailer? Ooh.
There is, and it looks good. I can't wait to see what's going to happen. We've finished up season two a couple weeks ago, and it definitely left me wanting more. Like, I can't wait to see what they're going to do. I'm definitely I'm a fan, and you definitely have to keep trying Game of Thrones. I mean, I have heard that it takes some people a couple of episodes to get into it. I liked it right from the start, but I was captivated by the scenery. I have to admit, I was. I love the snow, and it starts out, and there's snow, and it was beautiful scenery to me. So I think that's one of the reasons I kept watching. But and I was confused for a while because there's so many different houses and so many different people. And you know, I think it'd be, if I went back now and started watching it, it would make a little more sense to me, I think, than the first time around. But I don't know. I did. I'm a big fan. And you know, this last season, the last episode I saw was like an hour and a half long. I mean, they're shorter. It's a shorter season because they're only like six episodes, but they're like an hour and a half long. So it's like, you know, same. Which I think is pretty
right,
cool.
And I think there's only two episodes left now, isn't there?
Yeah.
And they're setting it up for a big war, and I'm like, a big war in two episodes? Okay.
Yeah, we'll see a huge.
Didn't they have a big war the other week, and everybody complained it was too dark, and they couldn't see
the
what was going on?
Yep.
Yeah. Having a big battle at night is a bad idea, really. And
You know what? People are stupid. The people who are complaining are stupid, I think. You know? I mean, I think that was part of the intrigue, is that you couldn't totally see everything. But you know what? If you were actually there, I doubt you could have either. You know? So, I mean, I thought they did a great job.
I loved how dark it was. I actually loved it.
I did, too. And I thought the whole
especially
thing was
especially when Arya comes out of the dark and
oh, God, yes.
Kills you-know-who.
Right? Let's do that. You-know-who. You know what happens? Yeah, definitely. I don't think I breathed that entire episode. So it was great. So, well, that's enough of our Game of Thrones segment.
yeah, we should have a jingle for it. We'll spoil it for you next week as well.
I want to hear more about your book, the Techromancy Scrolls. I think I said it right? I said it. I got
it.
Show off.
I know. But do you have a reading for us, Eric?
I do. This is always fun. I him and ha and a lot when I read. But yes, I can do that if you would like.
We would definitely like.
Yes,
I could drink more for this part, yeah.
Yeah, just throw a flag out, foul on the play when it's time for me to stop here, and I'll start with chapter one. And this is all from, it's a first-person narration, all from Lainey Herger's point of view. And so this starts in basically the keep, Wexbury Keep. Okay, and chapter one is Portcullis. Says, I yawned as I stepped out of my family stone cottage with my little brother, Chase. The steel pin hinges groaned in protest. I closed the old wooden door as quietly as I could as not to wake Mother. Her health had been deteriorating, and we didn't like her exerting herself. We walked to the pig pen, and I grabbed my wooden cart by the handles and started towards the portcullis of the defensive wall around the city. I called back, after you feed the hogs, bring Matilda to the butcher. She isn't laying anymore, and we could probably get at least 2 pennies for her or trade for half a sack of grain. She has some good meat on her. He nodded and grabbed the bucket to get some of the cast-offs from Castle Wexbury we had traded some eggs for. Our feathered ladies were some of the best laying hens in the village, and the lords of the castle were partial to them. I smiled. He was only 7, but he was a godsend around here. With Mother down, he was all I had to help me with the chores while I was out scavenging. I was not about to marry myself off just to maintain the household. I don't care if I was of age of consent last month or not. No man would have me, ever, and I didn't understand why any woman would ever betroth herself to one. I shivered at the thought. I looked back at the door, then added, remind me when I get back to grease the door hinges with lard or bacon grease, would you? I don't want that noisy door waking Mother. She needs her rest. He nodded in earnest. I smiled at him. He was such a good boy. I was so proud of him as my brother. I started wheeling my cart to the cobbled road in the twilight of the morning. He called back, do you think you'll get enough today, Aunt Lainey? I smiled more confidently than I felt as I crossed my fingers at him. Let's hope this batch will get us enough for the medicines. He crossed his small fingers too and smiled and went back to the morning chores. I walked down the lane. The village was waking up. I started passing people getting to their jobs and had to move for a couple chargers trotting gallantly past as the morning patrol went to replace the night patrol outside the walls. I looked at them in awe and amazement. To be a noble would be so glamorous. They protect the village, and we tithe them so that they can concentrate on that defense. I blinked. One had the crest of a lightning bolt crossed with a sword on her sash. A techno knight. I noticed my jaw was hanging open as she passed by, and I snapped my mouth shut. She noticed my admiration, and she winked at me as she trotted past. She looked a year or two older than my 19 years. I blushed. She was not only a knight, but a techno knight. Her red hair flowed back over her armored shoulders like a cape draping over the stud leather and armor. Her emerald eyes were sharp, and they glowed with the magic potential of a techno knight. They seemed to swallow me whole. I looked down in embarrassment when the other knight said loudly, looks like you have an admirer, Celeste. She hissed at him, don't be such an ass, Bowen. I kept my eyes down, but I could feel hers on me. I had a little affinity for magic, and I could tell when it was focused my way. Her eyes were overflowing with it. She kicked her horse and gave it some rein and shouted, "Hya!" and galloped off towards the gates. I looked up to watch the other knight urge his horse to catch up. I grinned. Being a mirror knight of the realm, he was subordinate to that techno knight. What did he call her? Celeste. He was subordinate to Lady Celeste. I noted the street lamps in the row I was passing were flickering. I looked at the electric filaments and the globes, and they were intact. So I stepped over and kicked the ceramic containment vessel, which held the magic potential that powered the little copper-wound generator. With a scree that was just beyond all but the hearing of the young, the bulbs brightened and remained steady. I grinned. I absently wondered how the wizards of the realm of the before times powered their tech. I have heard so many ludicrous theories, like chemical reactions. The old buffoon who proposed it called it batteries or some other nonsense. That would be terribly inefficient, and what would you do with these batteries once the chemical reaction was exhausted? Throw them out and build new ones? Non-renewable resources were in such short supply that it would be a waste. But that wasn't as funny as the technomancer who was laughed out of the conclave for suggesting that his interpretation of the old writings of the before was that it was with water from rivers. How can water power electricity? The two do not mix. I chuckled at the thought. No, the wizards of the before were so much more powerful than us. Just look at all they had accomplished. We unearthed more every day. They had been so far beyond our abilities, it was only the great impact that brought down their civilization. I imagined all the wonders I would have seen if I had lived in their time. As I approached the huge gates of the portcullis, I glanced back to the east, to Castle Wexbury, the great castle with its soaring towers and waving standards. It was so large it formed two-thirds of the east wall of the village itself, well over a half mile of stone. There, hanging above it in the sky, were the three sisters, the three pale white moons, and the ring of debris around the earth. I tried to imagine what it would be like to see one huge moon in the sky in ancient times before the great impact. A rogue astral body had collided with Mother Luna and tore her in half. I looked at her oblong egg shape and the two smaller sisters, Athena and Freya, which formed afterwards. They say that Mother Luna will again be round one day as gravity reshapes her as she spins. She appears to be always looking down upon the earth with her red eye. The pale red glow of the vast magma fields on her broken edge will eventually be swallowed, much like the vast magma fields on the dark side of the earth. It is rumored there were billions of people in the before. Over three-quarters of the population was wiped out when the debris storm and shockwave had hit the dark side, and even more died in the early years. There were rumored to be huge bodies of water they called oceans that covered most of the surface of the planet. I would not have believed it if I had not seen some of the old writings that they have in the castle, the Techromancy scrolls. And that is all I had prepared.
I was just going to stop you. Perfect time. Yeah, perfect.
You built that world. I was there. That was great. I enjoyed that. That was, very good bit of world building. I think a lot of authors forget the importance of building the world before they actually get into the story. I enjoyed that. I like that. I want more of that.
Boom. Yeah, well, great. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, I have to admire, the fantasy writers out there because, you know, when I write something, it's in this world. So I don't have to make up things. I don't have to, you know, use a huge amount of imagination.
I have to create an entire world. Yeah, I think that's why I've always edged away from fantasy because it just sounds too difficult. You've got to think of the moon, it's just like, wow, I'm extinct, I like, the odd things in everyday life sort of thing rather than building a whole world. I doff my cap. I really do. Fantastic.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So I am, I love this part, the 11 questions. Would you do 11 questions with me, Eric?
I can do 11 questions. I had 12 answers prepared, so I'll just mix and match with you.
Excellent. Here we go.
And now, 11 questions.
Number one, what's your guilty pleasure?
My guilty pleasure? Well, everybody that knows me knows that it's chocolate eclairs.
Ooh, I'm right there with you.
Is that the candy or the cake?
It's a pastry.
The pastry, yeah. That's, yes, fine.
Yep.
I'm right there with you. I think we should all have eclairs after the show.
Yeah, my imaginary pet platypus, Frank, gorges himself on them.
Fantastic.
Did you say your imaginary pet platypus? Is that what you said?
Yes. Oh, yes. That's awesome. One of my fans' favorite people. He's an imaginary pet platypus. His name is Frank.
Fantastic.
That is awesome.
We need Frank on the show. Yeah.
That is cool. Okay, let's see. Do you prefer the mountains or the ocean?
I prefer the mountains.
I had been to Chicago once, and it felt weird to me because everywhere I looked, there was no mountains. Everything was flat, and I felt kind of a little bit of anxiety, I think, not seeing mountains around.
Where are you at? Where are you located?
I'm located in Spokane, Washington. We're right next to the Rocky Mountains. And if we go 2 hours in the other direction, we're at the Cascade Mountains. So we're kind of surrounded by them.
No, oh, wow.
I'm in Tennessee and close to the Smoky Mountains. And I actually a peek of the reason they're called the Smoky Mountains. It was like super hot out, and then it started raining. And the mountains in the background, you could see the mist or whatever. It was so cool looking. I was like, oh, that's why they call them the Smoky Mountains. It was pretty awesome. It was. It's beautiful.
Oh, flash.
Definitely not. Yeah. Mm-hmm. what's your favorite lunch meat?
My favorite lunch meat is turkey.
Oh, fine. Oh. You know.
Oh.
There was when I was a kid, the Tyson's lunch meats, and they had chicken back then, and I loved it. And they don't have chicken anymore, so turkey's always been my favorite since then. But then, about a year ago, they started making it again, Tyson's.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm really not a huge lunch meat type of person anyway, but, you know, turkey happens to be the most boring. That's, you know.
It is the dullest of the lunch meats, I'm sorry to say.
But it goes with everything. It goes with eclairs. It goes with cranberries. I mean, come on.
Well, that's, if you throw enough stuff at it, it's edible. Yeah, I'll give you that one.
I love to follow up that question with, if it were legal to do so, would you eat human flesh?
Ew, no.
I love that answer. That's great.
What do you do?
Well, I haven't been infected with the zombie virus yet, so for right now it's an ew. I mean, maybe later, like say if I'm ambling along with the zombie crowd or something like that, then it might be something tasty. But
right now,
ew.
You can always tell when we have, you know, somebody and other than a horror author. All of our horror authors are there. Pretty much 9 times out of 10, they're going to say, it doesn't matter if it's legal, I do it anyway, or, you know, with A1 sauce or, you know, something like that. So I know, right? I'm with you. Ew. Oh, no. Let's see. Have you ever been pulled over for a traffic violation?
Yes.
Yay. Okay.
Quite a few. I make a habit of it. About every 2 years, because if I don't, then I feel like I'm doing something wrong.
Nice.
Excellent. I like it.
which do you prefer, Android or Apple?
Okay. This is something I shouldn't say out loud with my wife in the other room there. But Apple, not Android.
Yay. Good answer.
Yes.
I'm with your wife. So.
Android. Well, I tell you this though. If Android was true Android on most phones, you know, instead of these kind of bastardized, hacked up versions of Android that you can't update every time that Android updates, I would probably do an Android phone because. It's getting to the point where the interface is getting close to what Apple has had all along, and I like that intuitive interface. But the problem is nobody, there's only 2 phones that are running the true Android interface. So I got to say Apple. iOS.
I respect that.
I'm an Apple person as well, I have to say.
I'll wave my Apple banner.
Yay!
Let's see. Which franchise do you prefer? Halloween, Friday the 13th, Elm Street, Hellraiser, or Saw?
Just because I've never seen a horror show
that I haven't laughed during, because I think they're all comedies. I've never been scared in a movie before. I got to say Friday the 13th, because I grew up with it, and I loved it.
That's not a bad answer. It isn't. I mean, you know, the best answer would have been Halloween for me and Hellraiser for James, but I will accept Friday the 13th. Yeah, I will accept
I didn't hear Nightmare on Elm Street, though. Did you include that in there?
Yeah, Elm Street was there. Yeah, definitely.
Oh,
that's
okay.
One
see, that's my second. That's my number two. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, what I thought was great about it was that Freddy Krueger was the same actor that played in the old television series V.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yep.
I forgot he was in that. Yeah.
And that's why I loved so much. I loved Nightmare on Elm Street because it was him. I was like, yes.
Yeah. Excellent.
Let's see. Roller coasters, yay or nay?
Yay. The only problem is I haven't found one yet that has lasted long enough or thrilled me enough. I guess I'm a little bit of a thrill seeker. I'll do anything but jump out of an airplane.
Oh, right. They'd have to push me.
Why would you jump out of a perfectly good airplane? I don't understand.
Right?
I have done that, and it's a hell of a thrill, I have to say. It really is. You should do it. Everybody should do it at least once. Some people only do it once, obviously, but...
I hate to say
did you sigh in relief? Did you sigh in relief when your chute opened?
Oh God!
I was kind of happy that it opened in the end. Yeah, but it's one of those. The problem is, having done that, it totally ruined roller coasters for me.
Oh no!
It absolutely ruined because it's my roller coaster. Yeah, ho hum. When you jump out of a plane at 15,000 feet, it's like that's real shit. But roller coaster, you know, here we go. Yeah, we're going to, you know.
I hate to say that we are out of time for our show, and I didn't even get through all my questions. I know. So, Eric, you have to promise to come back. So, you know, if the least, we have to finish the question. So you have to promise to come back.
Great. Not a problem. I would be happy to.
Well, it's been an
absolute
pleasure. You must bring I'm a big platypus fan myself, actually, so we can talk platypi together.
Perfect. I like it. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us. And it is XD's that time. We have to say goodnight, XD.
Goodnight, XD.
Goodnight, XD.
Like a crown.